On today's episode, tape 14, Younger Than Yesterday by The Byrds and The Notorious Byrd Brothers by The Byrds.
Trust the Wizards present Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s. Before going on tour with his band, Guided by Voices, in 2001, Robert Pollard recorded his favourite records onto 62 double-sided cassettes. Music from 1966 to 1971, from the best-known bands of the era to obscure, unheard-of psychedelic curios. The Wizards are on a mission to listen to and explore every groove. Kicker and Chorizo invite you to turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream as you listen to Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s.
So, two albums by The Byrds today, and we are both wearing our fringe like Roger McGuinn for the occasion. First of all, we're going to be talking about Younger Than Yesterday. This was recorded at the end of 1966 in Columbia Studios in Los Angeles. It came out at the start of 67, in February 1967. Again, to give you a bit of the context around that, so they went in to record it just a couple of months after Revolver came out, which I think was is relevant. The band at this time were Jim McGuinn on lead guitar and vocals, David Crosby on rhythm guitar and vocals, Chris Hillman on bass and vocals, and Michael Clark on drums. No relation to Gene Clark, who had left the group a little bit before that. And there was a bit of a shift in the songwriting around this time, where Gene Clark, who had written quite a lot of the songs on the earlier albums, and Clark and McGuinn in particular had written a lot of the albums. And then on this album, there's quite a lot of Chris Hillman songs have been written by or co-written by him. This was listed in Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Albums, of which the poll that came out in 2003, number 124, greatest album of all time. One placing behind Catch a Fire by the Wailers and one ahead of Raw Power by the Stooges. The second highest Byrds album on that list. Sweetheart of the Rodeo was a few places higher at 117, and Notorious Byrd Brothers, which we're going to be talking about later on, was a little bit behind it at 171.
It's interesting, isn't it, that at this point, those three albums you mentioned there are the highest ranking in that list, and yet sort of common thinking at the time was that the Byrds had reached and passed their peak. I mean, they were no longer very popular, were they? Although this album, Younger Than Yesterday, I think, did it hit the top 20 in the States? Nearly, anyway, I think, probably. But there was a sense that there's a fading of their fame. And yet they're about to produce the three best albums of their career.
Yeah, the big hit singles were earlier on, weren't they? Turn, Turn, Turn and Mr. Tambourine Man were the really, really big hit singles. And they were, you know, a year or 2 years in the rearview mirror by this point. And like I say, Gene Clark leaving them was considered to be a bit of a blow. He was considered to be a very, very key member of the group. Yeah, so it's got 11 songs on it. It's definitely versatile. One of the interesting things about The Byrds is that all of the different styles of music that the different band members bring with them. Chris Hillman was kind of from a country bluegrass kind of background and had been in bands before. David Crosby was a big sort of very knowledgeable guy about music with a lot of interests in experimental music, in jazz, in classical music. And Roger McGuinn had been around, or Jim McGuinn, as he was known at this point, had been around the block a little bit as a session musician, playing on lots and lots of other people's records. So yeah, they bring a lot to it. You can hear a lot of influences of different types of music across this album.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because you said Hillman, you know, is country and western. But for me, the biggest difference between this album and what's come before is that there's brass on it. So who brought that then? I mean, whose influence is that?
Well, I think I read somewhere that either Hillman or McGuinn, or possibly both of them, had played on some sessions with Hugh Masekela, the South African musician, and another South African musician, And that Hugh Masekela is playing the trumpet on So You Want to Be a Rock and Roll Star. There's another South African musician who they met through those sessions who's playing piano on some of the album because they've worked with
them. Definitely raises the level for me. The first three albums are, you know, they have their moments. It's quite poppy, isn't it? But this is a serious record, I think. And
Am I right in saying that in the next episode we're talking about the preceding Birds album?
That's right. Yeah, it's 5D. Sort of out of sync.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll come back and we'll talk about that the album before Younger Than Yesterday. We're going backwards in time, a bit like, you know, I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now.
Well, let's talk about that song, shall we? Because, I mean, the title Younger Than Yesterday obviously is it's not a lyric, actually. It doesn't come from My Back Pages, but My Back Pages is one of the key tracks on it, a Dylan song, of course.
Yeah.
A song which I didn't really, I did a little bit of research, you'd be glad to know, and it turns out that this Dylan song, written in 64, but not performed by Dylan at all live, until the late 80s. And I think possibly his first live performance was with Roger McGuinn, is that right? Jim McGuinn?
I don't know.
Something like that. I mean, he didn't play it live. I don't know why. I mean, it's a song that I suppose talks about him rejecting his early protest singing style. I don't know. I mean, I think it's a brilliant song. I think the lyrics are fantastic. I think the Birds do a better version than Dylan.
I agree completely. I got a list in the magazine over there, which is a magazine from 2005, Uncut Magazine, and it's got an article in there, the 100 Greatest Bob Dylan Songs, and My Back Pages was number 98. For me, it would be very significantly higher than that in my personal list, probably top 20. It's one of my favourite Dylan covers, and... along with Lay Down Your Weary Tune that the Birds also did, is probably my favourite of the many Dylan covers that the Birds did. I agree with you. It's better than I love the Dylan version, but it's better. And I kind of see what you're saying about the words. The words are absolutely fantastic, but I see it as well as him kind of condemning that previous incarnation of himself when he says about lies that life is black and white. The verse about girls' faces where he's... Hasn't he said in the past, I don't know if it was that far in the past, but I think Dylan has said in the past that part of the reason why he did all that protest stuff was because of the Suze Rotolo, who was his girlfriend at the time, and it was all just to impress her, which might be just the kind of thing that Dylan says to be contrarian, yeah, to throw people off the scent. But girls' faces formed the forward path from phony jealousy, memorising politics of ancient history. But also I thought there's a little bit of anti-authority, not wanting to be up there. As soon as you start putting your head above the parapet and trying to preach or tell others what to think or say or to be a leader, then you become the enemy. Don't follow leaders, watch the parking meters, as he says in another song.
Hadn't he disappeared at this point as well? He had his motorcycle accident and disappeared around this time.
No, that's later.
Is it?
That's later. That's a couple of years later. I think because this song was on another side of Bob Dylan, which was...
No. Not when he'd written the song, but at the point of the Birds record. So sort of 66, 67.
Oh, yeah. Very possibly, yeah. It was around about that time, yeah. We should save all this chat for when we do Blonde on Blonde.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I love the Dylan version, and the Another Side of Bob Dylan was one of the first Dylan albums I owned. But it's not pop music. When Dylan sings it, it's not mainstream, it's still folk. But this version and this arrangement, I think they've made a few subtle changes with some of the chords here and there. And there's a killer guitar solo.
The musicality is fantastic. And yeah. I'm not 100% sure on this, so I'm sure our listener will correct me. But I think that when Dylan finally got around to playing it live, he played the Birds arrangement of this song.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a version on YouTube of him playing it with Roger McGuinn, and it's definitely a very Birdsy arrangement. Because they've turned it into a pop song, don't they? And with its sort of radio-friendly refrain of the a bonus fact: do you know who's playing organ on this song?
I don't know who is.
It's our old friend Van Dyke Parks.
Is it really?
It is. Yeah,
he produces a good record or two, doesn't he?
Yeah. He is the only thing he does on this album, as far as I could tell, but that's him on the organ. And he does a mighty fine job, I have to say. So are we straight in with saying that, well, that's an outstanding song from the album?
It is an outstanding song. I would say it's not my favourite song. I would say it's my second favourite song on the album. I'm going to go straight in and say that my favourite song is the opener. That's the one I really love.
Right,
So you want to be a rock and roll star. Even though I probably prefer the Patti Smith version of it that was on... which album is that on? Is it on Easter? But nevertheless, it's brilliant. And I think what I really like about this is the trumpet solo, which is, as you said, Hugh Masekela, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the riff's great. The bass is fantastic.
It is.
I like the little scratchy percussion thingy again.
The Guero.
Is it Anti-Monkey? Is it Anti-Monkey? I don't know.
Well, Hillman said that it was perceived at the time as being Anti-Monkeys, but he said he wanted to make it clear that it wasn't about any of the individual members of the Monkees, all of whom he likes and respects and are his friends. Right. It was more about the industry.
Yeah.
The industry.
But it's a great song. Absolutely brilliant song.
Yeah, it is a brilliant song. And all the things you say, the lead guitar part, it was amazing. Yeah. And some great scrapey fish action going on in the percussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's definitely one of my favourites. In fact, I'd say the whole of side one is absolutely fantastic. There's not a song on it that I don't really, really like. We've got from that, Have You Seen Her Face, which is very Beatlesy, the Beatles, not long before that, had come up with I've Just Seen a Face, another great guitar solo on that, which was a very sort of British Invasion type guitar solo. It sounds like George Harrison or Dave Davis from the Kinks playing that guitar solo, and it's so good.
The bass is very McCartney as well, isn't it, on that one?
Yeah, and there's lots of places where the bass is fantastic, and it's moving about a lot. CTA 102 is, you know, I always loved the bird song, Mr. Spaceman, and it's a bit like that, isn't it? It's about kind of like the excitement of discovering new places in space.
I really like that one. Have You Seen Her Face is fine, but CTA 102 I think is a great song. I think there's a lot going on there. I think we can't just skip over it. It's got silly little voices. Do you know anything about those voices? Is it just sped up birds?
Yes.
Or it is, okay.
And backwards sped up birds, and they're not saying anything. They're not saying anything. They deliberately did it so that people would play it backwards to work out what they were saying, and they're just saying gobbledygook. They're not saying anything of note.
Right.
Yeah.
And CTA 102 is, as I'm sure you and all our listeners know, a quasar in the constellation. Do you know which constellation it's a quasar in?
I'll
give you a clue. It's a flying horse. The flying
Pegasus.
Horse.
The flying horse.
Yes.
Oh, God, don't remind me.
It's a quasar in the Pegasus constellation. How about that? Because I didn't know that, actually. I didn't realise that's what it was about until I started listening and doing a bit of research. I thought it was a radio station, CTA 102.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a future radio station.
It sounds like it, doesn't it? But, McGuinn said that he... At the time when they wrote that, they didn't really know what quasars were, and they thought it might be a possibility of a sign of extraterrestrial life, but... now we know that they're just imploding stars.
Quail and Quasar are, of course, a key Pollard lyric, and indeed. I wonder whether there's a nod to that song in that.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I didn't really know this album, by the way, before the last few weeks. So there's quite a few songs on this that I didn't know because I had a Bird's Greatest Hits kind of thing when I was a teenager. And then in more recent years, I bought some of the CD reissues of some Birds albums, but not this one. I'm not really familiar with this album until last few weeks.
Well, I've actually had this album for a long time. I can remember where I bought it as well. I've got it on vinyl, very thin vinyl. I've got it in my hand now. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously a sort of mid-80s re-release. On Demon Records, I think it is. But I bought this in Sheffield when I was a student in Sheffield. So I'm saying it's 86, 87 I bought it. So I've listened to this record a lot. And maybe the some of the songs which you're thinking, oh, that's great, maybe have sort of faded a little for me. I mean, there's nothing on it I particularly... Actually, there is one I particularly like. But, I mean, I would say that on side one... Everybody's Been Burned, which closes that side, I really like.
Yeah,
CTA 102 and the opening track. The other ones are kind of okay, but Everyone's Been Burned is great. The solo on that is particularly
yes, good. And it's kind of got that weird sort of Eastern, almost Indian, sitar kind of music, and it's kind of like playing the notes in between the notes, a bit microtonal, and lots of drones, which are. That, you know, again, it's Crosby and McGuinn's influence of some of the stuff they were listening to. But, yeah, I really like that one.
The lyrics are interesting. It's on the face of it, quite a disappointing, bitter sort of love song, but then it has a twist at the end, and I really like that.
That's Pass Me By. What, can you explain the twist at the end?
Well, so, I mean, the singer is saying how, you know, basically love fails. You know, once you start to fall in love, it's time to run. So I know no turn to run. But you know that inside, if you do that, then and you choose to hide, then actually things will just be bleak and terrible. And so in that case, well, actually, I love you anyway. So he against his better wishes, against his better judgment. He is able to tell the person he's singing to that he does love them, even though he thinks actually that's probably going to be the beginning of the end.
Right. And that was one of the David Crosby songs on the album as well, isn't it? So
it is a David Crosby song. Crosby sings it, doesn't he? I think it's the lead vocal.
I think so, yeah. I think he sings that one. I think he sings Renaissance Fair as well.
That sounds very like him. The Crosby, Stills, Nash song. Is it Crosby, Stills, Nash? Guinevere? Is that a David Crosby solo song? But it sounds like that. It reminds me of that anyway.
Right. I don't know enough about Crosby, Stills and Nash. I've seen them live, but I don't really know any of their records. But I believe we're listening to one of their albums so further on in the series as well. The Renaissance Fair, I wouldn't have said it was one of my favourites on the album, but it's definitely the one that I keep catching myself singing. Especially that bit that goes, I think that maybe I'm dreaming. Do, 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 do. But yeah, it's really good on headphones, that one, because it's not as obviously catchy as some of the others on the album. But again, the bass playing is fantastic. It's just moving about all over the place. And then when it gets to that line, I think, oh, maybe I'm dreaming, then it just stops and repeats the one note. So yeah, I'm a big fan of that one. Talking of Crosby, though, the only song on the album that doesn't really get me is Mind Gardens on side two, where the music's quite interesting, and it's very experimental. It could have been an interesting sort of 1 minute experimental instrumental interlude, but at nearly 4 minutes, it goes on way too long.
It was an issue, this as well. He demanded its inclusion on the album, because I can't remember the chronology of it all, because he leaves, doesn't he, at some point? Does he leave during this one or after this one? Anyway,
he leaves during the recording of the next one.
Right, OK. So he's very upset that this song wasn't going to be included. It's not a very long album. I mean, I suppose they did need to replace it. But he had some other songs at the time. It Happens Each Day. Do you know that song?
It's on the bonus track, isn't it?
Yeah. So that would have been better than
this. It would have been, yeah. Yeah. The average... You're right, it's a short album. The average track length of the whole album is under 2.5 minutes. And at least two of the songs are under 2 minutes themselves. So... and this one just like I say, it could have been an interesting short little interlude, but the lyrics are a bit daft, and it goes on and on and on.
Oh, but nevertheless, it's the only dip, really, because actually side two has lots of songs I really like on it. So My Back Pages follows Mind Garden, and we talked about that. But before that, we have Thoughts and Words, which is another Chris Hillman song with backwards guitar on it. I think that's the one that sounds the most like Revolver.
Yes, yeah, I've written Beatlesy again, yeah. And the backwards guitar is great.
I really like it.
Yeah, and it's catchy as well. The especially the chorus, I thought I was on top of it all, that bit, it reminds me a little bit of Drive My Car, melodically, and it also the rhythm of it, it drives along, you know. And then at the end of the album is also very good. I really like the song Why at the end. Great harmonies on that, and probably the best guitar solo on the whole album. I think that either that one or the My Back Pages guitar solo probably my favourite guitar solos.
I've written exactly that down. Yeah, that's a great guitar solo, first one. So how? What's the difference? This is January 68, isn't it? So it's what?
Yeah.
Less than a year later.
Yeah. It was recorded later on in it's the second half of 1967. They took quite a lot longer to record this one than the other album. In Columbia Studios in Hollywood, and would have started recording this just after Sgt. Pepper came out in June 67. And Love were recording Forever Changes just up the road at Sunset Sound Studios, and yeah, it came out like you say in January 1968. Again, a bit more of a shift in the songwriting, even more Hillman stuff, Chris Hillman stuff. He either wrote or co-wrote nearly three quarters of the songs on this album, and the personnel is the same as on the other album, but David Crosby left during the recording of this album. Gene Clark rejoined the band briefly and played some gigs with them. But his contribution to what he's doing on this album, nobody seems to be too clear about, but probably not much, if anything. Yeah. It may be the odd backing vocal here and there.
Left as well, didn't he?
Sorry?
Michael Clark left as well, didn't he?
I think after this album. But it's kind of going...
I mean, the Crosby leaving is notable because of the artwork. And so I don't know if you have the album to hand there. I've got it. Again, I've got this on vinyl. I think I actually have an original copy. This is a 1968 version. And the cover features a picture of four windows with three birds in three of the windows and a horse. And I'm led to believe that the horse represents David Crosby, but that seems to be not necessarily what people are now saying. But it's clearly that, isn't it?
Well,
I mean, you've got four members of a band and one of them's left, and so you've got three members of a band and a horse.
And did you know that some sessions, for some of the photos from that session, actually have the horse facing the other way around?
Oh, the horse's ass.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Crosby seems to have a knack of falling out with a lot of the people he works with, doesn't he? Although I know that McGuinn, who seems like a very... I've seen Roger McGuinn live a couple of times, and he seems like a very, very nice... You can't imagine him falling out with anybody. And I noticed that recently on Twitter, he tweeted at David Crosby to say to him, look, you said I saw you on TV and you said that you'd fallen out with all your ex-bandmates and none of them talk to you anymore. And, you know, don't lump me in with Stills and Nash and Young. I've never not talked to you. I'm quite happy to talk to you. I'm not interested in the Birds reunion that you keep trying to get me interested in. But, you know, I've never said I won't talk to you. So, but he's a difficult guy, David Crosby, isn't he? Yeah.
Well, presumably he was doing drugs at this point as well, which made him even less stable than he might otherwise. Okay, he's on this album though, right?
Yeah, he's on it quite a bit. I think he left sort of halfway through. Yeah, and there's a few of his songs on it, but one of them, at least one of them, is Draft Morning, that they recorded most of the instruments for it when Crosby was still in the band, but they didn't record the vocals. And then after Crosby left the band, Hillman and McGuinn had a rough idea of what the lyrics were, so they kind of sung what they thought were roughly the lyrics, and much to Crosby's chagrin, they gave themselves a co-writing credit for it, which you know, a lot of the rows he has with the Birds, the other Birds, seem to center around Crosby wanting more of his songs on the albums and more of his songs released as singles, and
And then, but to be fair, it's a good song.
It's a very good song.
I like it. It's a very pretty tune. I think the lyrics are really good. Obviously, it's a Vietnam song, isn't it?
Yeah.
About Vietnam.
Yeah.
Leaving and all that. No, I really like it. I think it's certainly one of his better songs that he did with the Birds, I would say.
Yeah, I really like it too. I like the inclusion of that sort of trumpet called the reveille, or whatever it's called, that they use in the military, you know, the bugle thing. That was really good too. Yeah, and I think he also wrote most of Dolphin's Smile and Tribal Gathering. I think they're mainly Crosby songs. And they're good too, especially Dolphin's Smile.
Dolphin's Smile, I don't like.
You know, I really like that. I've always liked that one. That was on my greatest hits album that I had. I've always liked that one.
For me, that's the weakest point. Tribal Gathering, I like. It's sort of a jazzy feel to that, isn't there? It reminds me of actually David Crosby's solo album. I don't know if you have you heard that. The one, what's it called? If Only I Could Remember My Name. There you go.
Yeah.
Which I think came out quite quickly after this, early 70s, I think that came out.
Right.
And the sound on that is very much like Tribal Gathering, which is good. You know, that sort of the fast vocal delivery. I would say, I think it's in 5/4 time. Am I right?
It is. Well, most of it is, yeah. And the sort of quieter verses are in 5/4, and then it gets a bit heavier and goes a bit more psychedelic in the instrumental sections, doesn't it? Which I don't think those are in 5/4. But, yeah, you're quite right. It is in 5/4, as is the other song, Got to Get to You. Get to You, sorry. Oh, okay. Get to You is in 5/4 for most of it, and then there's another section... which is in 3/4. So, yeah, two songs with five beats to the bar. That's quite unusual.
By the way, I should say the guitar solo at the end of Tribal Gathering I really like as well. I presume that's not Crosby, though.
No, I guess not. And I think the other song, Get to You, I really like that song, but it's just a shame that the music is fantastic. It's just a shame the lyrics aren't as interesting as the music. And I'd say the same of Tribal Gathering, really. It's a shame that the lyrics aren't as good because the music's great. The lyrics let it down a bit, and the dolphin smile too.
I'm going to suggest it something here, which I think you probably won't agree with, but I'm going to say that the two best songs on this album are both cover versions.
Yeah, I think I'll agree with you. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really? Will you?
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about them then.
The two Jerry Goffin and Carole King songs.
Yes.
Yes, I agree. Going Back is I really love that song. I love the Dusty Springfield version, and one of my old bands used to cover this song. The lyrics are fantastic. It's that sort of melancholy nostalgia for getting older and time passing.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's a cover version, and yet you know the combination of the pedal steel guitar, and then of course the chiming Rickenbacker chords. Basically, it's the most birdy song.
Yes, yeah,
and them all. And la 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 la. But if you think what song sums up the sound of the birds for me, it's this. And they didn't write it.
Yeah, I know, and I knew that they didn't write this one. The other one, which is another song I've loved for years, wasn't born to follow. I didn't know that. I thought that was their original. I knew this was a Goffin King song, but and it's the best version of that song. And I love all the versions. Yeah. The Pretenders do a great version of it as well. But this is my favourite because of the harmonies and the Rickenbacker. The harmonies just add a lot to it. And when I've covered it in our band, we've tried to replicate those harmonies, and it's just a brilliant song to sing, and it's because of those harmonies, really. And do you know who else has done a cover of Going Back?
Ah, I think I might do. Bruce Springsteen.
He has, yes. In fact, he played it live in 1975, and it's on one of those officially released bootlegs that you can get on his website. Carole King was in the crowd, apparently, when he did that.
Oh, really?
But that wasn't... Yeah. No, I was thinking of the... former Manchester United and Aston Villa defender Paul McGrath.
Really?
Who has also done a version of it with a video of him standing on a beach and singing it. And do you know what? He's not a bad singer, Paul McGrath.
Well, that's something that I won't ever go and watch. But, okay. Let's keep going with the idea of the cover versions being great, because it wasn't one of the follow I wanted to talk about. I think that's almost the first song by the Birds that I heard. When I was at school, someone gave me a tape with the Easy Rider soundtrack on it, and I think there's quite a few Bird songs on there, but this is definitely on it, so this is the one I probably know the most. Again, quintessentially Birdsian sound here with the guitar and the steel intertwined again. I don't know what the technical term for it is. There's something going on with the vocals which is very good, very clever. Like a vocal inflection, or I don't know what it is, at the end of each line that is very catchy. I really like that, and I particularly like the very loud guitar in the middle of the song.
Yes.
Really, really good.
Yeah, another of my absolute favourite Bird songs, and I think I must have first heard this on the Easy Rider soundtrack, because I think I mentioned on the Tommy episode when we, back in my teenage years, after the pub, we'd get a kebab and then go around my mate's house to stay up late smoking and watching VHS videos. And Easy Rider and Tommy were two of our most watched videos many, many times. And I think there's just two Bird songs on it, which is the Ballad of Easy Rider and this one. But the lyrics of this one fit so well about how just wanting to be, you know, free and away from it all and in the countryside amongst the rivers and the mountains. And yeah, the scene where they play Wasn't Born to Follow in and they're riding along on those big open roads with the mountains in the background is one of the best bits in the film. Yeah, I wasn't until, like I say, it wasn't until I was doing the research for this that I found out it wasn't Bird's original.
Educational, this podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of prefiguring Sweetheart of the Rodeo a bit, isn't it? It's kind of leading into that, as is old John Robertson as well.
Well, old John Robertson, talking of discovering things, I was very disappointed to discover that it's not about the Nottingham Forest left winger of the late 70s and early 80s.
No, it's not, nor is it anything. Did he ever play with Paul McGrath, I wonder? Yeah.
Scotland. He's Scottish, isn't he? Paul McGrath, so no. They might have played against each other,
yeah. Yeah, it's a good old up-tempo country song, that one, with a really strange sort of quasi-classical instrumental section in the middle.
Yeah. I like that song. I think it's really, really, really interesting.
Do you know who it is about?
I do. I looked it up, yes. So it's this filmmaker.
Yeah, yeah, with a big moustache.
I can't remember where he was, but he wore, I mean, he literally wore his big Stetson hat and had a big tash and all that. I don't remember where he was, though. Have you got the details of that?
I think he was just a guy that Chris Hillman used to see around the neighbourhood in Los Angeles.
Okay.
Yeah, and by the time Hillman would have encountered him, he was, like, pretty old. He was in his 80s because he was a film director from the sort of silent era. Yeah, the only thing I would say about that song is if they kept it a bit simpler, because they throw on a few sort of psychedelic special effects in the middle and lots of flange especially, and I just think it would have benefited from just a more straightforward production like the Sweetheart of the Rodeo album.
It becomes a country song then. I like the fact that it's got you said flange, is it not phasing as well? I like that to it. I think it makes it a much more interesting song.
Yeah, I like it on lots of the other songs on this album. I'm just not sure it works on that particular one.
There's some good jangly guitar on the song before that, which is The Changes Now. And some really good bass playing. And what I like about that is there's kind of a long instrumental bit in the middle with a distorted guitar solo.
Exactly.
And it also goes quite country. So it's got a lot going on in it.
It's that's definitely one of my favourites. It's because of what you say, the sort of country rock chorus and then the psychedelic trippy verses and then the... Yeah, like you say, the instrumental section, which is all just one chord. It's just one repeated chord and with the guitar wigging out. It's really good. Definitely one of my favourites on the album. The lyrics are good on that one as well.
The other song that stands out for me, we've got jumped past it, is the opener. I really like Artificial Energy. Again, it's got your horn section on it. It's a very overtly drug song. But it doesn't get banned, of course, whereas other songs have previously been banned. Really like that. A great opener.
And it explicitly mentions the drugs because it says, I'm coming down off amphetamine.
Exactly.
It does seem rather unfair that, what was it, Benefit of Mr. Kite was banned for mentioning a horse. And this actually mentions amphetamine and as far as we know. And it also says that he's in jail. Because he kills someone.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know.
Oh, great song. I really like that. Really like that one.
Yeah, I do. I like that one as well. But it's not particularly one of my favourites, but I do really like it. And then the other song that I really like is the very last song, Space Odyssey, which is much more folky, kind of hypnotic, repetitive song about sort of finding... Again, it's to do with finding life in outer space, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got a great guitar sound on this one again.
Yeah.
It's not one of my favourites, but I like it. What I particularly enjoy is the fact that 1996 must have seemed so far ahead.
Yes.
And 1996 for me was a terrible year. It's the only year that I've ever been to Wembley with Leeds United, 1996. And I came back from the Czech Republic specifically to see Leeds play in the League Cup final against Aston Villa, which we didn't turn up, even though I did.
Did Paul McGrath?
I don't think McGrath was playing in that. He was at Man United by then, I would have thought.
Without going off on too much of a tangent, but QPR were relegated in 1996 as well. So
it's a terrible year.
A terrible year. So I think, are we ready to give some marks?
Well, let me say from the outset that these two albums are both great.
Yes.
There's no doubt. This is, for me, the peak. I don't want to spoiler alert for the next one, but this is the peak for the Byrds for me. These two albums are high quality stuff, and it was very, very difficult. If you'd asked me before I spent the last couple of weeks listening to them a lot, I would have had Younger Than Yesterday as being my favourite. I've changed my mind now, actually, and I'm going with the Notorious Bird Brothers as being my favourite. But I guess that could change again. But yeah, I'll give you some scores if you like. Are you ready for some scores from me?
Go ahead.
I'm giving Younger Than Yesterday. Mine Garden is the problem.
Yes.
Younger Than Yesterday, because I really don't like that. It's the only song out of all these I don't actually like. So that's going to pull it down a little bit. But I'm giving it a 7.5.
Well, I've gone an 8. Yeah, I agree with you. My Garden I don't particularly like, but the rest of it is all fantastic. In fact, it's very near to an 8.5, I think. Favourite songs are, you know, Time Between, My Back Pages, Renaissance Fair, Have You Seen Her Face? But really, apart from My Gardens, I like absolutely all of it. So a very, very strong 8.
Well, what are you going to give the Notorious Bird Brothers then?
Also 8. Also 8. Now, I don't like it quite as much, but it's still an 8. There's not a lot in it, obviously, because I'm giving them the same mark. But the other one was very close to an 8.5. And my favourites on that were Wasn't Born to Follow and Going Back. Also Changes Now and Space Odyssey.
Bird Brothers, I'm giving an 8 as well. Dolphin Smile, I don't like. But again, the rest of it is stellar, and it's got my favourite Bird songs on it. So yeah, it's an eight from me for that one as well.
Yeah, I think Wasn't Born to Follow and Going Back are probably in my sort of top 5 Bird songs of all time. But there's another one of those which is on the next episode, I think. So do you want to tell us what's in the next episode? Because it's not just the Byrds in the next episode, is it?
No. So we're moving on to tape 15 next. We've got the Byrds' Fifth Dimension. So we're going back. We're going back to the album that preceded Younger Than Yesterday, Fifth Dimension. And we're also going to be looking at an album that wasn't released until 1978. But it's Del Shannon. The album is And the Music Plays On. There were recordings made in 1967 with Andrew Lou Goldham. It never came out at that point, but we're including it, or Pollard includes it, as being a late 60s record that we should listen to.
Robert Pollard's Guide to the Late 60s is a Trust the Wizards production. You can find out more at pollard60s.com and on Twitter at pollard60s. If you liked it, then please subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. You may also enjoy their other podcast, which you can find at trustthewizards.com. Original music by the Malibu Storks. Kika Revels and Chorizo Garbanzo are currently appearing in Waiting for Godot at the Mail Theatre in Leeds.